We are Gucci.
Oh, should we talk about the ETFs? Didn't that happen after our pod?
No, fuck. Who cares?
It happened after our pod.
Did it?
Yeah, it happened on Thursday.
The ban and then like saying we're gonna reevaluate.
Then we're gonna review it. Yeah.
Yeah,
we
can talk
just
about
give
it
like a quick tap tap.
Yeah, we can talk about it. We'll give it a tap tap.
Okay, tap tap.
Well, what's up, freaks? You heard a little pre-show brainstorm there. Welcome back to Rabbit Hole Recap with Matt and Marty. We'll get to the ETF. Don't worry. I just surprised Matt. He didn't know we were recording that little pre-ad lib.
Yeah, you pulled a fast one on me.
So welcome back to another week, freaks. Week two. About to get it in the books. A lot has happened in the last week. Let's start with Vitalik's admission. Vitalik Buterin, co-founder of Ethereum, lead scientist of the Ethereum project. Some would argue a centralizing figure in the project. I'll say maybe not so anymore. But he came out with a blog post last night, basically admitting something that Bitcoiners have been clamoring about for years, that development and capabilities at the base layer, layer one, the protocol layer, should be as few and simple as possible, and that all the complexity should be pushed to layers above the protocol layer. Matt, how did you take this news? It's very surprising.
It was basically keep the protocol layer simple, use layer two for scaling, which is what the Bitcoin camp has been saying for the longest time now, years now.
Like almost half a decade, I'm pretty sure.
And is the whole reason Ethereum exists is because it was the idea of base layer scaling over...
Pushing it to the second layer. Because Vitalik was perturbed that he couldn't do what he wanted to do with Bitcoin, so he went to create Ethereum.
Right, but now they ran into all these different troubles.
They're finding... like maybe there was a reason he couldn't build on the protocol.
Well, like CryptoKitties, for instance, was super successful for like an 8-hour period or 10-hour period. The whole network came to a grinding halt. I remember during the ICO craze when it was some random, people would go to send an Ethereum transaction and it wasn't working. And you'd do a quick Google search to see what ICO was launched that day. And that's why no transactions were going through. Yeah. So it's just not an efficient way to scale, and that's completely fine for him to acknowledge that, but it kind of feels like a whitewashing of history a little bit, you know, like, oh, this is a genius idea.
Yeah, a lot of people are treating it like somebody said it was masterclass.
It was a masterclass.
Masterclass, paper. I mean, listen, freaks, like. You can roll back the tape. I've been saying this for almost a year now. I think the episode with Pierre in particular, part one or two, we said this specifically.
Like, right, right.
So we all know I'm a bit of a village, not a village idiot, but like a village like lurker, not necessarily building anything. I understand a few of the technicals, but I really invest in and have an outlook on these projects based off heuristics. One of which my favorite heuristics is keep it simple, stupid. An emulation of this would be Gaul's Law, which is any complex system that has ever become complex. It's basically started out as a very simple function that is built throughout time.
You just keep adding shit to it.
Yes, and any system that sets out to be complex from scratch and tries to build a bunch of complex functionalities out of the box will inevitably fail because that is not the way you scale, especially distributed systems.
Yeah, from like a robust strength defense kind of way.
Exactly.
The smaller the attack surface,
yeah, so
the better you are. Keep it simple.
So if I were to be the writer for the Tetris bearish Ethereum paper that they put out earlier this month, it wouldn't have to be 42 pages. It would be like three sentences or two words. It'd be like Gaul's Law. That's
I'm sure would get you a ton of LPs.
That's all you gotta say. let me get your thoughts on this. What are we overreacting here?
No, I mean, we completely agree here. Yeah. There's no overreacting. We're being very, very polite about it, I think, actually. it was a little bit infuriating at first, but I've come around and it's just, at least we finally have agreement on this. So that's that, you know. Yeah. I'm not kind of.
Yeah. We were right. Point one for us.
Told you so. We get to say the famous told you so.
All right, on to the next one. We talked about this in the first episode. Core version 0.17 is being released in the next couple weeks here.
We should go back for a second. He like hedged it a little bit, right? He still wants. He just said like layer two has its place. He still wants all these sharding and different scenarios like that into play.
Yeah, and
so there'll be more told you so moments in the future.
Okay.
Okay, that's good to continue.
It feels like the goalposts are moving a lot in with Ethereum.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. It was like kind of like a little bit of a hedgy.
Yeah.
Hedgy situation.
Yeah, I would agree. It's interesting. You have Lubin going on like a media tour.
You got to calm the markets. The important thing is to calm the markets.
Exactly. Lubin's going on a media tour. I saw he was on Yahoo Finance today talking about Ethereum. He was on, was it CNBC a couple days ago? I think he might have been on Bloomberg as well.
Please, guys. I'm not selling. You don't sell. We're all good here.
We're good. Please.
Joe Lubin also is one of the founders of Ethereum. He has like 15% of Ethereum supply or something like that.
Yeah, something crazy. And some would argue he's more powerful than Vitalik, myself included, or has more influence. I don't want to say powerful.
Okay, next topic. My bad.
All right, yeah, we were getting onto it. Core version 0.17 is coming out, and there's a couple of upgrades into the next version, one of which being an improvement of SPV nodes, which is basically going to allow SPV Lightning nodes, I believe, which is pretty cool. It's the upgrade's called Neutrino. That's getting merged in, I think, over the next two or three major releases, and that's getting initiated in 0.17. So that is something incredibly innovative. It's going to allow a lot of innovation and definitely something to keep your eye on. And I thought this would be a good opportunity for you to explain how Bitcoin is still innovative, even though the development process is somewhat conservative, because there's a lot of people out there that have said that Bitcoin is inherently uninnovative because of its lack of ability to hard fork to basically get in better features. I would argue that is completely false. And could you explain sort of the benefits of soft forks and backward compatible upgrades within Bitcoin?
Well, that's always been the argument that the shit corners have given us. Most of the time, a lot of the times with these altcoins, what you see is they have this great idea to save Bitcoin, to make Bitcoin better. It gets rejected, and then they go and they launch their own coin. It goes back to our earlier discussion, right? That you want to keep it simple. You want to keep everything as simple as possible, as conservative as possible, as slow as possible. You're moving billions of dollars. You can't have a fuck up. You can't have the littlest error can happen. So you move slow, steady, and you try and maintain backwards compatibility at all costs. I mean, you agree with that, right? Pretty much everything you said.
Yes.
Now, I think there might be a situation where a hard fork is needed in
there
the future.
There is a situation where a hard fork is needed. We know it. It has to do with the Unix clock, I believe, or not the Unix clock. There's like a Y2K bug.
Right, or Y2K, something like that.
Yeah,
right?
Y2K style bug where I think it's the year 2038 or something like that.
It's a while off.
Yeah, but the consensus between people, this scared the shit out of me. So this is a good bug to like know about. I don't know exactly what it's called, but it's a Y2K-like bug that is going to force Bitcoin to hard fork in the future. And it's pretty much guaranteed. Some people think there's a backwards compatible way, but a lot of people think there isn't, from what I can glean.
But that kind of situation, it's really easy to get consensus.
Yeah, it's like we either do this or the network implodes.
But I also think there'll be, you know, situations where it might be a lot more difficult to get consensus.
Privacy-related stuff?
Or? Yeah, basically privacy, mostly privacy-related stuff. And if that happens, you know, we'll cross that bridge when we cross it. I think that, you know, worst case scenario, you have two chains running next to each other, and people will decide which one they find more valuable. But the idea that you need to, if you hard fork all the time and you make it like really common to hard fork, like the Ethereum community does, like the Monero community does, you're adding an attack vector. You're adding this situation where people can, a central group of actors can just push through new code that changes key elements of the system.
Yeah. So that, I think the point we're trying to get across here is there are ways to be innovative without hard forking, and to assume that Bitcoin is not innovative because it doesn't hard fork is a very poor assumption, in my opinion. It's like SegWit was soft forked in, that arguably enabled Lightning Network, and a ton of innovation was enabled because of that.
And it makes future soft forking even easier.
Exactly.
Exactly. I mean, hard forks should be avoided at all costs. And that's a feature. That's not a, you could be running, you know, one of the earliest versions of Bitcoin and it'll still work.
Yeah.
It's pretty fucking cool.
So viva la decentralization. Stay away from hard forks, even though that's more to do with consensus than decentralization. It's been a long day. Next up on the list, CNBC bullshit. How about that post? How about that segment they ran last night? They interviewed Roger Ver, some kook in the woods, and Jordan Belfort.
Jordan Belfort, yeah. The guy from Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah, upstanding citizen.
He was literally, his qualification was, I ran scams, so Bitcoin's a scam. I think.
Right?
I didn't watch it. Yeah, I don't think you watched it either, right?
I watched like the 2-minute clip.
My dad watched it.
What did he think?
He said they didn't only say bad things. So really? I think that's a plus.
Okay, that's
good. He asked me who Roger Ver was.
Oh.
Or you might have called him George Ver or something. He got him completely wrong. But I mean, screw that. Like they, what's that law that there's another law that's like if you know a topic really well and then you watch, you know, regular media about it, you see how uninformed they are. There's no way that they went out and they were like, let's make a well-informed docu whatever on Bitcoin, and then they pick like Tree Guy. Well, I don't even know who he is. Roger Ver and Belfort is ridiculous. I think they had Draper on too. My dad likes Draper.
He's got a nice Bitcoin tie.
He brought it up. He's like, he wore the Bitcoin tie on the
boss. Hey, this is CNBC Fast Money, the program that was shilling Nautilus coin in 2014 and sold you all Ripple at the top.
$3 right at the top.
Literally, step by step, walked you through how to buy it at the exact top. So.
And their Twitter account just trolls us. They just put out ridiculous content all the time.
Yeah. So I want to put too much credence into anything CNBC pushes out. I'm sorry, CNBC. That's a fault of your own doing over the years. So when they were pumping Nautilus coin in 2014, that's when I was like, all right, this shit's getting
longer. Brian Kelly.
Right? We member. I member. That and Dirac. He spun up a shitcoin with Bryce Wiener. Remember Dirac? It was like coupled with Nautilus.
Coin. Yeah.
Backed by gold or something
good
like that.
Good old Bryce. Good old Bryce and Brian.
Yeah. The tag team of the shitcoin days.
Okay, but anyway, that CNBC thing was a trash piece. And, you know, it's just, we figured it was worth mentioning because I'm sure people watched it. But
what are your favorite sources of information?
I'm Twitter and Telegram right now for Bitcoin stuff.
Yeah.
There's nothing really else.
I would agree.
Besides that, I mean, you should listen to this podcast as well.
Yeah, I would agree. I would say so.
But Twitter and Telegram, if you can, Twitter's definitely an addiction. I've heard you talk about this before. and like you really shouldn't spend that much time on it. But if you do, it's a really useful resource. It's a really
valuable resource. Yeah. Okay. Oh, WeChat and Alibaba or Alipay.
Oh yeah, they blocked it in China.
Is this an order straight from?
I'm not sure.
From the higher ups in China.
All I know is that it looks like it was like it's to block mostly like OTC guys and stuff like that, over the counter. So basically, like people trading informally between each other. Mm-hmm. I guess like China has famously banned Bitcoin about like 15 times now.
I'd say more than that.
And in this process, a lot of the exchanges move offshore and do all these different tricks and things. And the OTC market has really thrived there. So informal trades between people, and a lot of that's organized through WeChat and Telegram. Specifically, WeChat in China is huge.
And Alipay, correct? Do they have Telegram in China?
I assume so.
Okay.
Because I've spoken to
people in Hong Kong, or
I don't know. They might be blocked there.
Yeah, it might be.
Whatever. WeChat's number one. It's like their Twitter and their WhatsApp and their. I think it's like everything all combined into one.
Yeah, apparently.
Like. And now they're blocking all crypto transactions, and I they might even be using keywords to block things. I think they closed down some groups. So major censorship over there.
Our hearts go out to our Chinese brothers and sisters who are being censored out there. But it's another interesting thing to get into. Like, it's been brought up in more and more conversations I've been having with people. Like, when are these nation states going to attack these cryptocurrencies in earnest? And China's been an interesting like testing ground for that.
Well, I mean, I think it's really interesting because we have a lot of pressing free speech battles going on in America right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have the whole Alex Jones and Twitter situation where he got deplatformed on all these different platforms, and Twitter didn't deplatform him. People said Twitter should deplatform him, and some people said he shouldn't get deplatformed. And then at the same time, you have Defense Distributed with the guns.
Mm-hmm.
And they're getting sued, and he's uploading the files, and you have all that going on. And then in China, like, you see what the end result is. Like, just because, even if you don't agree with people's politics, you know, at some point, it's just an extremely slippery slope. At some point, they're going to come for things you agree with.
Exactly. No, and that's actually one thing I was talking about today in particular was Defense Distributed. And I was saying, like, people should start paying a lot more attention to what's going on around them in particular, because I think it's going to be a very telling precursor to how these governments might attack Bitcoin, because it's very similar First Amendment arguments that can be made for both Defense Distributed and Bitcoin in particular.
Right. Code is protected under free speech.
Yeah. So definitely pay attention to what's going on with Defense Distributed. And again, like I said this today, on the podcast I was on, but like I didn't grow up with guns. Like, I wasn't allowed to watch Power Rangers because they had guns in them, but like I very strongly believe in the First Amendment, and basically what's going on with Defense Distributed in particular, they're basically showing people like the mechanics of how a gun is made, and you can go to a library and find these books, and this has been like, and Cody Wilson put this,
they're uploading 3D printer blueprints for guns. That's the code to print your own.
Yeah, but it's basically translating the book into a different language, right? Just a programming.
Well, people are selling the book now. They're a book of all of the code on Amazon, and I think Amazon actually blocked it. Mm-hmm. And they're selling it, you know, through different avenues. And Cody just opened up his website again, and the block that they have on them doesn't stop him from sending them out as USB sticks. So now he's sending them out as USB sticks. So it should get interesting. But I think the big takeaway, which is like the core of the cypherpunk ethos, is that, you know, we got to build these systems so that no one can get blocked.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as, if you build things that they can't get blocked, this whole discussion just goes out the fucking window.
It's mute.
Because you can't block them. You can't block anyone, you know. It doesn't matter if you agree with them, you disagree with them. And if people do illegal things or threaten people or you know, do any kind incite violence or whatever, then, you know, you do good old fashioned police work and you press charges against them.
Right. Yeah. There will be law and order.
Yeah, there should. Yeah, exactly. No one's saying that you throw that out.
Yeah, but there is like a big, like, it's interesting to see how the media is reacting to Defense Distributed in particular, making them out to be a big boogeyman.
Well, they kind of are.
Right.
I think the cat's out of the bag.
Oh, it definitely is.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, this is going to, yeah, even if for, even though all of his schematics are already out there, even if they somehow were able to get them back, which they won't, and throw him in jail and delete all of his files and everything, like some kid in like Bangladesh will come up with it, you know, or Singapore or wherever. It doesn't even matter. Anywhere. You just.
Exactly. That's.
And so then upload them to the internet. And then that's that.
Right. There's a, what's the monster where you cut off its head, it grows another. What is that?
I know what you're talking about.
I can't name it. I'm like in the daze right now. The hottest day of the year, by
the
way.
Hydra. The Hydra. The Hydra?
Yeah, the Hydra.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it is.
Talking about Hydras on the hottest day of the year. It was like 100 degrees in Brooklyn today.
Okay, boom. New topic. Yeah, way too hot.
Hash rate jump. Precipitous hash rate jump. Let's zoom in on this. I think some people were saying 30% in one day, which is insane. It hit 62 exahash at some point. It was hovering around. Yeah. Hovering around 45 exahash on August 25th. And at some point last night, yesterday, it was at 62. So that's a 17. That's more than a 35% increase.
Now, it's worth noting that this is it's a rough estimate because it's based on how many blocks are
mined
sold
in a certain amount of time.
Exactly. Yes. And it could be partially statistical anomaly, but it's a good sign nonetheless. Hash rate going up.
Yeah, and interesting jump though, but like hash rate continues to go up. It's that's like one thing I was also talking about today. Like, how long can it go at this pace? Like, I'm interested to see. Like, that's another thing we have to prepare for. Like, can it keep this hockey stick growth for how long? Can it keep that hockey stick growth?
And I think for a little bit now.
Yeah. What will the market reaction be to either plateauing of that growth or a decline?
I mean, I think you have the two combinations, right? You have the efficiency of the chips is getting better,
mm-hmm.
And the value of Bitcoin is getting higher, right? And both of those should lead to that hash rate going up, you know, continue to increase significantly. People always do this hash rate to price comparison thing.
Yeah.
And I don't really, they have an interesting relationship with each other. But I wouldn't say like one follows one or one follows the other.
No, especially when you get to like the underlying mechanics of how these mining operations are actually working. Because I would, once these miners put in the sunk cost of actually buying the rigs, and what you'll find is there's a lot of there's a good amount of time between when they initially put in the orders and when they receive the miners and are able to have them up and running. So if these miners are going to make that expenditure, they're going to plug them in. And what people don't realize is they're plugging them in after decisions they made 6 months ago. It's not necessarily like they bought them yesterday and like, hey, we're going to mine Bitcoin and stuff like that.
Yeah, and they all have different expenses. They all have variable expenses, and they don't know, you know. So this whole idea that you can determine what the break even cost is ridiculous. They all have different costs, different opportunity costs, different situations they're in. I mean, like if you're in Venezuela, you can technically be losing money, you know, but you're not actually losing money because anything you get is worth it, right?
Yeah.
Or And the other thing is, and it's one of the reasons I tell people who are interested in mining to just leave that to the big boys and to buy some, is mining is like the ultimate like leverage long-term play, basically.
Yeah.
Because your payout is over time. You're committing all this sunk cost of the CapEx. It's crazy. So miners in general tend, I would guess, you know, in this most recent run up, there's probably more people that took ridiculous risks and shouldn't, are probably stronger hands, right? They're thinking on longer time scales. They have the money lined up, you know, they're making a net profit every time they're running their miners. And
yeah, that's another thing people were talking about is the switch of the burden of cost and mining going from capex to opex. So going from capital expenditure to, some people think that these ASIC miners in particular are, they're so in demand, the price is getting driven to such a point where most of the expenditure is going to be focused on making everything as efficient as possible at the firmware, hardware, and then obviously like your...
And getting your electricity costs as low as possible.
Exactly.
That goes back to our hockey stick hash rate. Like I don't think that has happened yet. You're probably people are calling it a little bit too early. But that's the goal. It's the commoditization of mining hardware. And then once you get to that point, it's not like the ASIC you purchased is obsolete in a year. It's slightly obsolete, but not completely obsolete, mm-hmm. right? And then you can do all sorts of cool things like run them in boilers and use the extra heat to heat a home, and then you're able to mine for what otherwise would be a loss, but it's not a loss. Situations like that, you get some really clever uses once you don't have to worry about the hardware going obsolete like right away.
Yeah.
And you can really quest out that cheap energy.
Interesting things ahead, people. So that's like a cottage industry to think of if you're looking to build something out there, like thinking 10 years ahead where there's going, maybe. Maybe greenhouses that are powered by Bitcoin miners or something like that.
No, there was a company, I think last year or something, that came out with like a radiator.
Siberia, right?
An ASIC is basically a radiator. I think it was like a British company or something. Like an ASIC is already basically a radiator, just shooting out hot heat, you know? So they were like, you could put it on your wall and it'll mine cryptocurrencies for you. But it turns out that like right now,
they're too loud.
It's like a really shitty miner and a really shitty heater. And it'll go obsolete really quickly because it's not worth it. But the
potential is there.
It'll be there in the future.
And I think this conversation is actually a perfect segue to a great article that came out yesterday from a very underrated Bitcoiner, I would say, is Laurent MT, at Laurent MT on Twitter. He's based out of Paris. He runs the Block Explorer, OXT.me. Definitely check that out if you get a chance. He did an incredible investigative report on the spam attacks of the summers of 2015 and 2016, I believe. Just an overall very analytical mind, and has really jumped into the data behind the Bitcoin blockchain in particular. And he released the first of a four-part series attempting to debunk the FUD around Bitcoin mining. You'll hear the headlines like Bitcoin mining or is taking up 1% of the world's energy consumption or something like that. And everybody putting out these reports is trying to measure energy consumption based off of per transaction, like cost per transaction. And they're really coming to these final numbers and metrics that are from a wrong perspective. They're not really taking into consideration the age of the UTXO set and the amount of power that it took to hash certain UTXOs at a certain point of time, which really, really come into play when you're trying to value the amount of energy consumed by Bitcoin in particular. So this paper, Gravity, is the first part. Definitely check it out. It's on his Medium, at Laurent MT. And
we'll put a link to it.
We'll put a link in the show notes. We went over this a little bit, Matt. You want to dive into like the details of what he was talking about, or do you want me to dive in?
I mean, basically it's, you know, we have people that are trying to push a specific narrative, right? And that narrative is that Bitcoin is wasteful. We see this, Bitcoin mining is wasteful, and we see this both in the crypto world and from the outside. In the crypto world, you know, they're like, oh, use POS or use this system or use that system, Bitcoin mining is wasteful. And then outside, they're like, it's an environmental disaster, you know, we got to shut this thing down. And it's the wrong way of looking at it, right? And he puts it in a really interesting perspective on how that's flawed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he dives into the math. So he thinks, right now, a lot of these studies, like I said, they're basing their assumptions based off the cost of per transaction, and they're really leaving out two particular variables that really draw a different picture once they're taken into consideration. And again, that's that is the age of a UTXO. So basically the metric that you should be following is how much value is being secured, and you have to take in the whole UTXO set, including when a UTXO was created, how much energy it took when it was created, and the difference between the energy it takes now to secure the whole network to when it would the an old UTXO was created.
Yeah, when you're mining a block, you're not just mining the transactions included in that block. Not only do those transactions have multiple outputs that, you know, aren't in each transaction can have multiple outputs, but you're securing the whole network and every single transaction before it, all of that is happening every, you know, on average 10 minutes when a new block is found.
Yeah. And so the conclusion of this paper, just to bring it all together, is that basically Bitcoin mining is becoming more and more efficient over time when you take in the supply or the reward halvenings and the supply inflation.
And all the past transactions.
Exactly. That's a little spin the table 180 on the mainstream media. Bitcoin's actually becoming more energy efficient over time, and it's helping us find cleaner energies.
Yeah, on top of that, it's the miners, as we were talking about earlier, miners will always go, especially as time goes on, the main cost will be electricity. And then you'll have subsidiary costs, which is labor, you know, land, and like regulatory risk. But the main cost is electricity. So if you can get your electricity as cheap as possible, that's ideal. So that does two things. It directly incentivizes more efficient electricity. So we're going to have cheaper, better electric generation supply. And then it also happens to be that renewable is often the cheapest because they have these times where it's excess, where renewable has this issue where it's not all the time. It can't give you, like, if you have
there's not enough demand for the energy at all times.
Well, and it goes both ways, right?
Yeah, exactly.
For hydro, there's not, right, it's hard to store it.
Yes.
Right.
So when, and it's for some energy plants, it's hard to justify keeping the lights on if they have all this excess energy at certain points of 24-hour day where it's not being used and they're sort of wasting the storage of it. So you bring Bitcoin miners there, you don't waste that energy, you turn it into liquid Bitcoin, and you basically eliminate waste of energy. So that would be a waste of energy.
It's like a synthetic battery.
Exactly.
Right? So it's like instead of storing it as energy, which you lose like 40% of the energy when you store it because it's not efficient enough, you just convert it to Bitcoin, and then you can store that energy, export that energy anywhere you want in the world. You just turn it to money.
Yeah.
So you can have like operations, you know, you can have a wind operation in the middle of nowhere, Canada, where no one lives. And as long as you can get a decent internet connection out there, you can just mine Bitcoin on windmills out there or solar or whatever. And no one has to be connected to it. You don't have to be connected to a grid. You just have to be connected to the internet.
Yeah. And then
that's pretty crazy.
Exactly. And then on top of that, like, even with dirty energy, like in oil refineries in West Texas, like what people don't realize, these oil refineries will sometimes, or most of the times, let off excess natural gas or methane into the atmosphere. And it is terrible for the atmosphere when it's just left to go float into the atmosphere and destroy the ozone layer. But what in West Texas in particular, miners are going to those refineries, capping that excess methane or natural gas. I'm not sure which one it is. And then turning
that. I think it's nat gas. Yeah. Right, if we're talking about hash gen, it's nat gas, pretty sure.
So it's nat gas. So
they put like a storage container next to it. And then they, whenever there's these releases, these excess releases of nat gas, they use it to mine Bitcoin. So the miners are turning on and off, you know, but when they're being used, the electricity is free, basically. They were throwing it out before.
It's like, I've heard like half a cent a kilowatt.
Yeah,
like
I mean, to the operator, it's, you know, that it was going into the sky. And it's money out of nowhere.
And for the Earth, I've actually talked to somebody who's in the know about this. It's actually better for the Earth if that energy is burnt instead of just sent into.
That makes sense to me.
Sent into the atmosphere without being used.
You know, it's just, and then you have, there's so much waste in our current system. You know, like I had a guy that was that worked as an advisor for Lufthansa, you know, lecturing me about Bitcoin energy usage on Twitter. Like, we waste tons and tons of energy. The current banking system wastes tons and tons of energy. Bitcoin is a decentralized financial network. It's the base of this whole new, you know, trust minimized system we might have. To all of a sudden say, like, that's waste and these other things aren't waste is already ridiculous.
Yeah, and that's like...
And you can't stop it. Like, tough luck. If you don't like it, you know, hopefully it'll work out because you're not going to be able to stop
it. Well, that's... But I do... We talk about this a lot. Like, Bitcoin is helping people think in different ways. And, like, what I say a lot about Bitcoin from a monetary perspective, like, people never think about the concept of money. And Bitcoin's making people think about the concept of money and monetary policy and the history of it and how it affects our everyday lives. Then, like, you attack it from other angles, like mining efficiency and energy efficiency. Like, you're finding, like, all right, now you start questioning, all right, if Bitcoin's taking up 1%, consuming 1% of the world's energy, allegedly, because people have done the math and they think it's precipitously lower than 1%. But even if it were 1%, like, all right, what's the benchmark? Like, what are you benchmarking Bitcoin's consumption against? And if we're going to do, like, monetary stuff, like, this is pretty heady. I thought about this earlier today. Like, how much energy is consumed to make sure that the U.S. dollar remains the world reserve currency and remains the petrodollar?
It decides, like, if you rope in the military, then you're just estimates. Just, I don't even know where you put it on the graph.
Exactly.
It just goes crazy.
Exactly. Yeah. You rope in the military, all the contractors that come in with that, all the rebuilding you have to do after you blow up countries and the tanks.
It was like your pod with Joe earlier this week. Or did you dropped it?
Today.
Today, yeah. So it'll be yesterday when you guys hear this. You know, Joe was talking, he made a good point. He's like, at the end of the day, fiat's value depends on the trust in whatever government issues the fiat, right?
Yeah.
So, like, you got to rope in all those costs.
Yeah.
They're key to backing that whole system.
Right. But again, as a benchmark, it's like, okay, this is true. This may be true, but let's take a look inside before you get angry and scream bloody murder. Let's evaluate the situation here and weigh the pros and cons. And I think the pros of Bitcoin mining and the incentives of the game theory that are built into Bitcoin mining are an extremely net positive to human society. Extreme net positive.
Yeah, I mean, I think it puts, like, you know, people talk about, like, carbon credits to incentivize companies to pollute less. You know, that's this extra idea they add on top. At its core, like, Bitcoin is a direct
market-driven incentive.
Yeah, and it puts a dead-on value to energy, like a base layer value to energy production, which is, like, it's just pretty crazy to think about. The implications are so fucking huge, and it just devolves into this argument about how Bitcoin's a waste. So it's right. it's a little bit frustrating.
So, for all you freaks out there who may have family members who are pushing this narrative on you, tell them to check out the pod, where you can take them to school yourselves and ask them to think. Ask them to think critically about what they're saying, because I think a lot of people will just say this. And again, it goes back to media narratives. Like, media is trying to create these boogeymen out there. Not this media that we're speaking through right now.
But yeah, we're a boogeyman as well.
Yeah, we might be.
Don't trust us.
We don't ever trust us.
Please don't trust anyone. Trust us. You're on your own.
Trust yourself.
You're on your own. Do we have any due diligence?
Do we have any parting notes on mining, the hash rate jump?
I think it's important to realize that the key thing that Satoshi figured out wasn't blockchain. It was POW. Like, that is, it's the base of all this shit. It creates the trust minimized environment, because everyone's just working in their own best interest to secure this thing.
I forget who brought it up today, but somebody was saying we should stop calling it proof of work, because that's really a misnomer. Proof of work derives from Adam Back's definition on hashcalf, as you had to prove computational work, so you can prove you weren't a spammer. With Bitcoin is more analogous to a clock, some people will say. Did you see that floating around today?
Yeah, I kind of did.
Yeah, and that's actually something I would like. I slightly agree with that. Like Bitcoin's, maybe if it's not a clock, it's like a metronome, like creating global consensus roughly every 10 minutes.
I like proof of work because I think that even if you're not a miner, you go to work in the morning, right? And then you can convert that work into Bitcoin, right? So we're all doing proof of work together, whether you're buying it or whether you're mining it, you're literally, we have this ledger that says these people did work and it's stored.
Yeah, so Santi Siri, who I spoke with in Chicago over the weekend, love that dude. He described proof of work as fabricating time with randomness. So you're basically fabricating time and random data, which is an interesting way to think about proof of work. Because again, there's multiple paths at which you can approach how you view these things. You just pointed at something. What was it?
No, I was. Jackson Palmer doesn't like that idea.
Well, Jackson Palmer also outed himself as a socialist the other week. I think we have to take what he says with a grain of salt from here.
No, yeah. I mean, that's neither here nor there. I mean, there's all these cool different ways to describe it. I mean, I like the, our buddy Nick Carter was talking about the aluminum smelting analogy, right? Because it's also...
I missed this. What happened with that?
It's also like a very electricity-heavy process, right? So like the main cost is electricity cost. So there was a lot of situations where they were searching for the cheapest energy possible. You know, they were using hydro. They were doing it in Iceland where they were disconnected from the grid, but it was a way to basically export energy. And it had a similar backlash because it had a very heavy electricity requirement.
And are you freaks happy with all the aluminum we have in the world? Has it helped our society as a whole?
I want to go back to tinfoil.
Okay, go back to tinfoil.
Okay, let's go next topic. What do we have here? Do we have anything
last
else?
Topic, NERP being rolled out in Germany. No interest rate policy. I'm trying to pull up the tweet now. But yeah, apparently particular banking customers in Germany.
Good luck pronouncing this bank. What's the name of the bank, Marty?
Hamburger Sparkass. I think I did a good job. Sparkassi, maybe.
Well, no, I don't know. We don't know.
Hamburger Sparkassi.
I'm sure one of the listeners will tell you that you're a fucking idiot about it.
They're going to charge their depositors 40 bips if they have over 500,000 euro in private savings. So 40 bips... on an annual basis, correct? Yeah. So if you have over 500 euro in...
500,000 euros.
500,000 euros. 500,000 euro in Hamburg Sparkassi. I could be butchering that.
They're just going to take money from you.
Definitely rethink.
You're paying the bank to hold your money for you.
Yeah. Is that ethical? Is that a fee worth paying, though?
I mean, as long as it's transparent, like, that's fine. But, we happen to have a better system.
Better alternatives.
Yeah.
But Bitcoin, I wouldn't argue that somebody, like...
They painted themselves in the corner. When you go down to zero,
yeah.
If you have to go lower, then you got to go negative, right?
They definitely painted themselves in a corner. Like, they'll never be able to raise in the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, you were just talking about this.
They'll never be able to raise above, like, 3%, I don't think. Not even. I don't even think they'll be able to approach 3% without.
I mean, what are we at right now?
I think we're at 1.2 bips.
Yeah, maybe a little bit higher.
Or 120 bips. 1.2%.
Yeah, maybe a little bit higher. But either way, I don't see how you can raise it much without just tanking everything, tanking equities, tanking real estate, the things that have exploded under the.
It really, at its
the
core,
easy money.
At its core, it just. Destroys our ability to pay back our debt.
I mean, and that's the thing. Is what I often come back to.
Oh,
is
shit.
Where are we at?
Oh, shit.
There you go.
Fed fund rates at 1.91. Approaching 2%. Maybe I was wrong.
It might break his number. Break his number.
Damn. We're really raising rates. Yeah, Donald Trump's been yelling at
that's them. What I'm saying. They've been aggressive lately, and I'm surprised that the market hasn't responded. We keep hitting all-time highs. We've never been in this situation before. you know, like, well, definitely we should link this Fred graph in there. Yes. Like when people say that's the way it's always been, it's just a complete fucking crock of shit, because, you know, we were on the gold standard, you know, 50 years ago, basically, and we've never had rates this low. And we've had this government-fueled bubble.
Never had this rates this low.
So who the hell knows what's going
to
happen?
Never had rates this low for this extended period of time. I mean, they hovered around, like, 0.05 bips to, like, 0.75 bips for a decade. Bips, for you non-financial nerds out there, is basis points, which is anything to the right of the decimal point percentages. Yeah, so it's interesting. That is the use case of Bitcoin. That's another interesting thing with my conversation with Joe that dropped yesterday, is that, like, it's interesting to see, like, some countries going through inflation bouts, like Turkey, without, like, printing an insane amount of money. It was basically just a collapse in the...
Loss in faith.
Yeah, loss in faith of the law and order of the country. So there's many ways in which a currency can unravel.
I mean, I think these, like, weaker countries are just... they're going to get hit first by, you know, all of this. And first it'll be like the USD is stronger, the yuan stronger, the euro stronger, but Bitcoin's just going to be chugging, you know, behind the scenes, and they're the first to fall. They just, I mean, I forget where it was from, but like the average
lifespan of a fiat currency is like,
was it a dead
years.
Fiat currency though? I think it was a little bit opposite of survivorship bias, but it was like 15 years or something, 12 years, I think, or 13 21. Years. So it's like a little sheltered American thinking to think, you know, oh, it won't happen in my country. Like, yeah, it probably won't happen in the U.S. anytime soon.
Yeah. And I think that's because it's the most polished piece of shit in the pile.
Well, it's just, we're America, you know, we have the military.
Yeah.
You know, we're a superpower.
America. What else do we want to talk about? That was all I had on my list. What do you got?
No, I mean, I think it was like kind of a slow week.
Oh, the ETFs.
The ETFs, right? Oh, we started the pod with the ETFs. We forgot about them. Right after our pod dropped last week, they were supposed to the SEC was supposed to do a decision on two ETFs, I think, but instead they said 9 were all out. And then, so then the market tanked, obviously, even though we all knew that they were going to say no. And then a day later, or 2 days later, they announced they were reviewing that decision for an indeterminate amount of time. So we don't know when they'll review it. And then the market bounced on the news.
There's been a lot of debate about the need for an ETF and whether it's good or bad for Bitcoin. I'm admittedly a little bit ignorant into the argument from both sides. Would you be able to give it to us?
Well, we went over this in the last pod. We shouldn't. I mean, look, the ETFs, I think, are inevitable. I think we don't need them, but they're going to happen, and they'll be a net good.
I think I was talking more about like Caitlin Long's appearance on Tracy.
Yeah, I
Myers.
Mean, she's afraid of fractional situations.
Yeah.
And I think. We definitely talked about it, because Bitcoin is going to go up forever by design, right? It'll go up and down, but it's theoretically, like, should go up, trend up forever. So if you're fractional reserve, you're going to get caught in one of the bull runs. And, you know, if the market hasn't already decided that you're a worthless fund, then you'll be worthless at that point, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think they can pull the same shenanigans that people say that they possibly pull on gold. I think...
yeah, because you can audit the blockchain.
The supply is too fixed. You know, it's like... you know, you want to try? You can try. People want to do this whole, you know, fractional thing with Bitcoin? You can try. You're going to end up... you'll probably end up getting burnt, and it'll just work itself out, is what I think. And I think that just in general, an ETF just gives more buyers... more people that want exposure to Bitcoin, an easy way to do it. They don't have to worry about custody and stuff. So even though I would never own one, it might as well be there, you know? Like, if, you know, exactly. Like, if someone comes up to me and says, I want to own some Bitcoin and I don't want to deal anything with any of the technology or whatsoever, I don't have an answer for them right now, you know. But if you had an ETF, I could just be like, buy some of that ETF. I know the guys that run it. They probably won't lose all your money, you know, and buy that and you'll get some exposure out of it. Yeah. But don't like hold your breath. You know, we've been talking about this shit since 2013. And at the end of the day, we don't need it. But it's not something to be scared of either. Is all I'm saying. All
right. Last news item here. We'll end on this. From the traditional financial world, the CFTC just fined Deutsche Bank $70 million penalty for attempted manipulation of the U.S. dollar ISDAFIX benchmark swap rate. So we have traditional banking system fucking with your fiat money. So they're basically trying to manipulate markets and manipulate a swap on a dollar derivative or something like that.
Right. Reminds me of the whole LIBOR rigging scandal type of situation.
Something
right?
similar. Yeah, so the CFTC stepped in here, so this is definitely a futures contract. So just so you know, people that are demonizing crypto out there for vandals and robbers and nefarious people, this type of crime happens in the traditional system as
let's
well.
Let's talk about what manipulation is. What is manipulation?
It's cornering the market in a certain way that you benefit.
But in a free market, is there
such a thing as manipulation?
I would say that in a free market, the only manipulation is if a centralized exchange is like using the information they know of the order book and people's stops and stuff like that to fuck with their customers. I would say that is wholehearted manipulation, and hopefully the market can figure that out. These are the exchanges I don't trust to use.
Well, see, I would back up there. I wouldn't even say it's the exchanges. You back up, you talk about LIBOR and other, like the gold fixing price in London in particular, those two prices and rates that are set, were set every, or still are set every day. Like they were manipulated heavily. And I don't think it's, like you said, if these exchanges are actively working against their customers, I think with LIBOR and gold rates in particular, it was traders trying to push the market in a certain direction based off of where their positions were, where they had positions in the market. They weren't necessarily nefariously trying to dupe their customers per se, but what they didn't realize is that LIBOR and gold fixing rates are rates that affect every fucking pension in America,
no,
every
but those
pension
are
in the world, like, and that is an unethical manipulation.
Those are centralized, like the LIBOR rigging scandal is because, isn't it like there was 15 or so banks that get to choose together.
We're in a fucking G-chat. Dude.
Yeah, exactly. My point was, I was trying to bring it back to Bitcoin. When people say Bitcoin manipulation,
oh,
right?
Okay.
That Bitcoin's a manipulated market.
Sorry for ranting there.
Because Bitcoin is the first time we've had anything close to a free market in, you know, our grandparents' lifetimes at least. And what is manipulation in a truly unregulated free market? If you don't know who the accounts are of the people on the exchanges, you know, you can't enforce wash trading, right? If one person has two accounts on an exchange that doesn't do KYC and they're trading between each other, there's no way for the exchange to stop that, right?
Yeah, well, the Chinese exchange is like, okay.
But they're doing it themselves.
Yeah.
Right? So that's what I'm saying. Like, I think that we've had people, specifically inside the crypto community, like people like Bitfinex, that they scream manipulation about things that bring into question what is manipulation to begin with, right? Mm-hmm. And I would be hesitant to say that anything short of a centralized exchange, an exchange of any sort, basically operating against their customers. So if you're like a whale, right? And you're sensing, you know, and Bitfinex is publishing how many shorts there are. It's public information how many shorts there are. And you decide to put in $20 million to fucking pump the price and liquidate a bunch of shorts to affect positions on other exchanges and stuff. Like, you're just playing the game. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I wouldn't specifically classify that as manipulation. I would classify that as a side effect of free markets and illiquid, you know, in as something that has a very small float that's very easy to move around, and that's just what the end result is going to be. And so if you don't like that, like, there's no solution. You know? Like, that's going to, it'll always be the way it is. It'll take more and more money to do those kind of things is what happens. Over time, it takes more and more money to do those kind of things.
Yeah, as the market becomes more saturated and less volatile.
Right, but there are certain exchanges that are probably trading against their customers and doing shady shit, you know. And that should definitely be frowned upon, and you know, hopefully the market will stop using them.
A lot of people accuse BitMEX of that. Do you think BitMEX is doing that? Because BitMEX has a prop desk as well or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I'm a little troubled with BitMEX. I think they offer a very compelling product. And
the research is top notch. Like,
they've been very reliable. I mean, people are going to get angry. When there's high when there's like high trading times, they go down a lot. It's like a meme. But they've never gotten hacked or anything like that. They seem to run like a pretty tight ship. But if they are trading against their people, you know, then that's a big no-no. I have an issue because BitMEX makes it really easy for retail to go high leverage, and you people shouldn't be trading at high. If I had BitMEX in 2014, 2015, I'd have no Bitcoin right now. I just would have. I would have. And we had OK Casino back then, but it was different. You know, BitMEX is like way more polished. BitMEX is like way more polished. It like tricks you into complacency, you know, and it turns it into basically just straight up gambling because Bitcoin is the float is there's the volatility is so high, you know, that you can get. You just get burned each way if you're using leverage. It doesn't matter. you could have called short from 14K and been trading short on BitMEX and just have been liquidated now like 25 times, you know, 30 times, just because every time you held it too long or turned in the wrong direction for a second before going down, after it passed your stop, just don't fuck with that.
Yeah. Risk management, people.
Dollar cost average.
Know your limits. I know mine. I don't fuck with leverage. All right, you have.
And he also doesn't own a credit card, but yeah.
I do own a credit card.
Yeah, you just got one. So that's it. Should we wrap her up?
Yeah, let's wrap her up. Let's do a little recap. What do we hit?
No, we shouldn't do a recap. The recap.
People like
idea.
The recap.
Do you think so?
That's the feedback I got.
Okay, give us a recap, Marty. All
right, we hit Vitalik's post, potentially an admission that the ethos of keeping the protocol level as dumb and simple as possible and pushing all the innovation to second layers. He dropped that. I would say that's an admission of something that Bitcoiners have been clamoring about for years. From that, we went on to the importance of softworks and being backwards compatible, and that Bitcoin is, in fact, innovative. Don't let people tell you it isn't. And then we talked about CNBC. We CNBC bash for a little bit. Don't trust them. They're pumping Nautilus coin in 2014.
They're the worst. I don't even know why they exist anymore.
Government strike back, WeChat, Alipay, all Bitcoin related, all cryptocurrency related, exchange.
Need to build the tools better.
Need to build better tools. Hash rate jumped. We don't know why. We don't know what it means. Apparently it's fallen back down. And then we jumped into Lorenz's piece, which you should all check out. We'll link to it in the show notes. And then NERP in Germany and this CFTC fine on Deutsche Bank, or excuse me, the other German bank, Hamburger.
And the ETFs denied and reviewed.
ETFs denied and reviewed.
There we go.
So that was this week in the rabbit hole recap. Thank you, freaks, for joining us. We'll be back next week.
Cheers, guys.
Peace and love.